Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
Hello. I'm normally up here in a very different capacity. I'm not normally speaking to you about anything to do with the Bible. Normally I'm in a wig or a moustache and I'm running some sort of ridiculous game. Or I'm being interrupted by a very annoying puppet. Don't know if anybody's seen him around recently, but it's kind of nice to be up here and not be interrupted and feel like something's going to spring out at me in any second. So I'm really, really excited to be here. And just for those of you, I mean, some of you will already know this already, but just for those that maybe are visiting today, or maybe you've been away over the summer, I'm just going to catch you up on where we're up to at the minute, because we are in the middle of the I Am sayings of Jesus in John's Gospel. And this morning we're going to have a look into John chapter 10, it's verses 11 to 16. And before we hear that, it's worth knowing that we're right in the middle of a story at this point. So in chapter 9 and chapter 10, there's a bit of a story happening. So I'm just going to roughly catch you up to where we're at in the story so that the rest of it will make sense. So the first thing, Jesus heals a blind man. That's really cool. I mean, who doesn't want to see that? That's awesome. Apparently the Pharisees, they're not cool about it. They're not happy at all. And they find out about Jesus healing this blind man. And they're not impressed, one, because they're like, oh, that's a bit interesting. How can he do that? But also because he did it on the Sabbath. So they were not happy about the fact that he did it, and he did it on the Sabbath. The third part in the story, everybody gets grilled about what happened. How did it happen? When did it happen? Were you there? Did you see it? Was he actually blind to begin with? Like, are we sure about that? Let's talk to his parents. Let's see what happened. I mean, how awkward is that? Can you imagine, like, asking someone, were you definitely blind to begin with? They're like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty confident that I was not blind yesterday. Or not blind beforehand. And then finally, they decide, well, why don't we just talk to Jesus and see what he has to say? So they end up in this conversation with Jesus. And the part that I'm going to get chosen to read for us is the part of Jesus' conversation with these Pharisees, who are already pretty annoyed. They're already pretty annoyed. And then Jesus has this conversation. And the trick is to find out whether you think they are more annoyed or less annoyed by the end of the conversation. See if you can figure out. So I'm going to invite Tosin up to read that part for us. It's also going to be in this, on the screen as well. So if you haven't got a Bible, you can use your phone or just read it from there.
If you'd like to have a church Bible, it's found on page 1017, and it's John chapter 10, from verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd.
Awesome, thank you. So on the surface, that sounds like a really nice passage, doesn't it? It's like, oh, that's nice. Jesus looking after the sheep. You know, a lot of you won't have met my mother, but she really is that stereotypical, standard mother hen, looks after everybody she can get her hands on sort of person. I'm not sure if we have a picture of her coming up there, hopefully. But next one. There she is. So, oh, we got it. It'll come up, I'm sure. There she is, and that is my beautiful niece as well. But yeah, my mother honestly will look after anybody she gets her hands on. She just loves mothering people and looking after people. And I think when you read this verse about Jesus, it's really tempting to be like, oh, Jesus is nice. I mean, you can just imagine it like, oh, look at him. Look at him there looking after the sheep. Sure, isn't he great? He's a great lad, isn't he, looking after the sheep? Well done. Thanks, Jesus. And I think, you know, it sort of feeds that idea that Jesus is this calm, meek, mild, wouldn't hurt a fly sort of mentality that, you know, often people have of Jesus. But when we look into this, I don't actually think that that's what Jesus is trying to say at all. I actually think that these Pharisees were probably pretty annoyed by what he said to them. And hopefully by the end, we'll see why. And another reason why we shouldn't read it that way about the nice, meek, mild Jesus and, you know, he's great, look at him go, looking after the sheep, is because I think you miss a huge side of Jesus' personality. You really, really miss how much bite he has sometimes, how much personality he has with these Pharisees and how kind of like he isn't afraid to be bold and blunt and say what's on his mind. And we're also missing what he's trying to say. So I just think, as we unpack this a little bit, look out for the points where Jesus, your image of Jesus is challenged a little bit. So we're going to look at two main things in this text. The first is the Good Shepherd. Who or what is the Good Shepherd? Why is he calling himself the Good Shepherd? And the other is this hired hand or the fake shepherd, as I like to think about it. So we're going to look at those two things. Okay, so the Good Shepherd. Now, anybody in here a shepherd? Like, just checking. You know, that's a shocker in London that nobody hears a shepherd. Shepherding isn't like it's not a common career choice if you live within the M25. You know, it's not something that you would kind of do. But for the Jewish people, this analogy or this image of the shepherd was, they would have known it straight off the bat. They would have known it really, really well. Because this was their ideal view of what kingship or leadership looked like. That was like the poster boy. That is what good kingship and good leadership looks like. And if you think about shepherding, I mean, it's known for being this all-consuming, you know, it takes up every aspect of your life sort of career. Now, growing up in a rural part of Ireland, you do bump into shepherds, you do bump into farmers. And I actually went to school with this girl whose parents were farmers. So she lived on a farm, looked after farms. And she used to just talk about, you know, she would wake up at 5 a.m. to go and feed all the sheep. That was before school. Then she would have a full day at school and go back and sort of clean out all the pens and do all the other stuff around the farm and top up the water troughs and all that sort of thing. I mean, and that was just a normal day. When it was lambing season, she would then come in absolutely knackered because she'd been up all night helping her dad get, you know, these sheep giving birth in the middle of the night and, you know, helping them with that. And then there was the little lambs who maybe their mum passed away in the birth or maybe they got abandoned, so she had to hand feed those. And my personal favorite, she used to have to walk around and just drag sheep out of hedges because they just walked in head first. Like, so she'd just have to like physically walk around, like drag these sheep out of a hedge. And then, you know, that was part of the job. And it just is this, I mean, that has to be a vocation. There is no way that you're choosing to do that. I mean, you'd have to want to do it. I mean, at 15, I was not cut out for that. I was like, I'm not going to wake up at 5. I think I'll wake up at 8:30. Thanks. I'm good. So, yeah, this laying down your life, like literally, it took over her mornings, her evenings, her nighttime, her holidays. It was all consuming for her. The sheep came first. And she was only 15. So, this laying down your life and the sheep coming first, it was really well known as this image of that is what a king is like. And if you find a king like that, follow him. That is good leadership. But Jesus doesn't say, I am a good shepherd. You know, he's not advertising himself as having good leadership qualities. You know, it's not like it's a job application and he's like, yep, good leader, check, that's me. But he is saying, I am the good shepherd, which has a lot more weight to it, a lot more. There's a lot more of what he's trying to say by saying, I am the good shepherd, not a good shepherd. And to be honest, this was a bit of a kick in the teeth to the Pharisees that he was talking to at the time because of what he was referring to. So we're going to come back to that in just a second. So we're going to jump briefly. You can turn with me if you want to. I'm going to read out parts of it. But turn to Ezekiel 34. And if you haven't read this chapter already, it is epic. Please read it. It's so good, especially if you're, like Henry was praying before, about the state of the world and how it's sometimes really depressing when you turn on the news. And I think whenever you read Ezekiel 34, you're like, yes, this is great. It's really encouraging. It's really good. So I'll summarize it roughly, just so you don't have to read the entire book while we're here. So what's happening? Okay, Ezekiel. Ezekiel and loads of the Israelites have just been taken over by the Babylonians. So they have just been taken out of Israel, Jerusalem, and they're now in Babylon. And this is about 5 years later, and Ezekiel is sitting by the river in complete despair, just feeling really, really sorry for himself. And he's like, God, what is happening? Like, where are you? What has happened? Why are we here? Like, have you abandoned us completely? Is that what's happened? And then all of a sudden, God's presence is there in Babylon. And God's glory just turns up there. And Ezekiel is just totally baffled. He's about like, whoa, hold on a second here. Your presence is supposed to be in Jerusalem. Your presence is supposed to be, you know, in the temple. What on earth is your glory doing here? And it turns out that the temple had just been let go. I mean, the Israelites, the religious leaders, they just weren't doing what they should be doing. They weren't looking after the people. It was all getting a bit corrupt. There was other gods being worshipped. And God was just like, well, what am I doing here then? Like, I'm out. Bye. So Ezekiel then realizes that, oh my goodness, okay, God has left the temple. This is not good. And the religious leaders, they're not in God's good books at this point. He's really not cool with that. And I'm just going to read you a little bit. I've just taken snippets, and this is from the Message version, so it'll be a little bit different than your version. But you just get a flavor of what God's up to at this minute. Doom to you, shepherd leaders of Israel, feeding your own mouths. Aren't you supposed to be feeding the sheep? As sure as I am the living God, because my sheep have been turned into mere prey, into easy meals for wolves, because you shepherds ignored them and only fed yourself. Listen to what God has to say. Watch out. I'm coming down on the shepherd and taking my sheep back. You're fired as shepherds of my sheep. No more shepherds who just feed themselves. I'll rescue my sheep from their greed. From now on, I myself am the shepherd. Ouch. Can you imagine being an Israelite leader at that point? And reading Ezekiel's words, you're like, ugh. You know, it's kind of like that tone. I'm not sure if my dad used to have this tone. And you knew that if you were getting told off in that tone, you were like, oh no, like, stuff's going down. Like, I'm not good, I'm not safe. Run. And I kind of feel like when I read that, it's like God's got his like dad tone on. He's like, no, I'm not okay with this. This is not good. And that's because of how outraged God is at how his people are being treated. And I think, you know, even back to how things are going on today in the world, and people are like, where is God? You know, God is as annoyed as we are. He is outraged. Read this passage. He is really, really not okay with this. And he promises from now on that he is the shepherd and he will rescue the sheep. Right, back to Jesus. So fast forward a couple hundred years, and here we have Jesus chatting with these Pharisees. And these people, they would have known the scriptures inside out. They would have known them. They would have known all about Ezekiel. They would have known all about the shepherd leaders who were in trouble. And they would have all known all about the fact that God had said that he was a shepherd and he was the ultimate shepherd going to come. Now, these guys didn't even believe that Jesus was a son of God or son of man or anything to do with a prophet. I mean, they didn't even think Jesus was worth talking to, never mind the fact that he was the son of God, that he was going to be the good shepherd. So I just think that for them, the audacity of Jesus to turn around and say, I mean, the absolute cheek of him to turn around and say that I am the good shepherd, it would have just been ludicrous. It would have been totally outrageous to say that. For him to be like, you know, back in Ezekiel when God was saying, I'm the shepherd. Yeah, that's me. I'm that shepherd. They would have just been like, not a chance. You're completely nuts. Like, there's no way that is you. And it turns out that that was the general consensus. If you read on a few verses later, it turns out that the crowd actually says, you know, they're kind of like, no, he's mad. There's no way that this is right. And what's awesome about Jesus here is that he doesn't just leave it at, you know, the good shepherd reference. Just in case they were a little bit unsure if that's actually what he meant, he phrases it with this I am saying right at the beginning. And I'm not going to go into loads of detail on this because I'm sure lots of other people have. I'm just going to quickly try and say it a little bit concisely. But the I am phrase is a massive arrow back to Moses when Moses met God in the burning bush. And God has given Moses a job to do. And Moses is like, who am I? Why would they listen to me? Who will I say sent me? And God says, tell them I am sends you. So we know that that is God's name. We know that's how God refers to himself. So on one hand, we've got I am, the God of old, talking to Moses. They know him. And then on the other hand, we've got the good shepherd, the God who makes his promises to rescue and to save and to fire the dodgy shepherds that aren't doing their job. And when you put them all together, it just is this huge declaration that Jesus is claiming that he is God and he is that shepherd and he is there to collect in the sheep. And if you know, if I want to paraphrase it slightly, it's almost like saying, I'm the God of back then, I'm the God of those promises, and here I am now. It would have just been ridiculous to the Pharisees. They would have just been like, this, no way, we're not listening to that, not a chance. And I'm just going to actually just read what it says in verses. This is in verse 19 to 21 in John. So this is just after Jesus has said all of this. This kind of talk caused another split in Jewish ranks. A lot of them were saying, he's crazy, a maniac, out of his head completely. Why bother listening to him? But others weren't so sure. These aren't the words of a crazy man. Can a maniac open the blind eyes? And what I like just at the end there, it's almost a little hint towards what Jesus was saying before, that the sheep know his voice. Like even amongst the chaos and people kind of being a bit like, no, that can't be right, and you know, this guy's crazy, we're not listening to him. There was echoes of people being like, oh, actually, you know, he did heal that person, and maybe this could be. You know, the echoes of them being able to hear God's voice. I love that. So what about this fake shepherd then? So we heard about the good shepherd, Jesus' huge declaration of who he is and what he's there to do. And then we hear about this fake shepherd, this hired hand. And Jesus has just lifted that image from Ezekiel, dropped it into their conversation, claiming that he is the good shepherd, and he's there for the sheep, the people that are there. And, you know, he's almost certainly implying that the Pharisees that are there are the hired hands. Almost certainly. I mean, he could be talking about other religious leaders that they knew, but there was definitely an underlying offense in there somewhere. You know, he was just laying it all thick. He wasn't holding any punches back. He just was like, just in case, you know. Just another little body blow to the Pharisees there. Little dig in the ribs. And I think it's worth mentioning that with these fake shepherds, at least for me, there is this element, this huge element of misplaced trust. The Israelite leaders were trusted to guide the Israelites. And the Israelites looked up to them as their trusted leaders. And we know from Ezekiel that they massively misplaced that trust. They so did not deserve the trust that was given to them. And then when we look at the fake shepherds, how Jesus describes them, we know that they abused their power, that they weren't feeding the sheep, they were looking after themselves. They were all in it for their own gain. And it actually says in the Message version as well, it says, they were in it for the money and they cared nothing for the sheep. They didn't care about the sheep. They weren't in it for them. They were in it for their own gain and what they can get from it. I wonder how many global leaders we can think of all around the world. There's loads and loads and loads we can think of and be like, are they doing it for the people? Are they doing it for their own gain? Do they really have the best intentions? What I like, though, about this full description of the fake shepherd is that it is a big contrast to who God is. The good shepherd is in it for the sheep. He's trustworthy, he's faithful, and he gives up his life to look after the sheep and gives up completely to protect them from harm. I mean, to think about that a person, a shepherd, instead of just fighting off a wolf, he would die killing that wolf just so that the sheep isn't harmed. I mean, that seems really, I mean, I don't know if I would do that for a sheep. So there's two things that I would like to, just as I'm finishing up in a couple of minutes, but there's two things that really stood out to me in this passage as I was going through it. And I'm going to just leave them with you to think about, to pray about, just to really explore for yourself to see how it fits with you and your relationship with God and your relationship with other people. And the first is God's leadership, God's example of leadership. God gives this incredible image of what godly leadership looks like. And not just in the form of the shepherd, that by itself is a great form of leadership, but by consistently following through with promises. You know, he made that promise hundreds of years before and then turned up in the form of Jesus to fulfill that promise. You know, we can trust in him. He is faithful. He doesn't just leave us hanging. He doesn't just, make promises and doesn't really get around to it. He doesn't leave us hanging. And you might not think of yourself as a leader. You might not have, maybe a job role where you think that you're in a position of leadership, but we all lead our friends in some way. We all lead our families in some way. You know, even if you are not at the top rung of your company, you have an influence and you have a circle of people who are influenced by you. And how we lead in that space is really important. And people see if we're in it for ourselves. They'll see if we are in it for our own gain and if we're willing to step on other people to get there. They will notice that. They will see straight through it. And when we do that, I feel like we're building our own kingdom. We're building what we want to see and what's good for us and our own gain. We're being the false shepherds. We're in it for our own gain. Or are we building God's kingdom, where everyone is valuable and cared for and respected and everybody is listened to? And I know there is some chat about whether you can, in corporate businesses, can that really be how you do things? I think it is. I do think it is. I know people who work in industries like that who can do that. And it has really benefited their career, actually, to work in that way. So that's one thing that really stood out to me from this. And the second thing that really stood out is our view of God himself. And I mentioned before that I'm from a Catholic background, and I can't speak for everyone, but definitely from my perspective, my view of God growing up was like a sergeant authoritarian, kind of like, he's in charge, you do what he says or else kind of thing. And that was really not helpful. That really wasn't helpful for me to understand who God is and what he's about. And when I looked into this a bit further and prepping for this, I was like, that is not what God is like at all. That is not his personality. And when you know God's personality, you just know that that isn't the sort of person he is. And I know I'm probably not the only person that does that. And I know I chat to friends of mine who are maybe on the fence about whether they believe in God and whether they want to follow this person, or people who are complete atheists and they're just like, I'm not interested in a God who is like this, this, and this. You know, a God who is pro-war and who's really angry. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not into him either. Who's that? Like, I don't know who that is. I wouldn't follow that God either. The God that I follow is a God of absolute love who would defend me with his life, who loves me completely, and if I was the only sheep, he would leave the flock to go and find me. That's the sort of God that I follow. That's the leadership and kingship that I follow. So just a little, like, have a little think about what your view of God is. Do you know God's personality? Do you know that he is good, that there's nothing about him that is against you in any way, that he is always on your side, he is for you 100%. And that when he makes you promises, he is completely faithful. There is no leaving you hanging and maybe I'll do it, or I'll do it if I have time. Completely faithful. Those promises are like money in the bank, if not better. It's his life's work. This is another one that I find really astounding to think about. It's his life's work to guide me through, to be in relationship and guide me through the chaos, the ups and downs of life. Like, that's what he considers his job. I'm like, what? You do that with your time just for me? It's mad. So yeah, I think I'm just going to ask the worship band to come back up. And just as we worship a little bit more of this incredible God who would go to the ends of the earth for us, I want you to just have a little think about your view of God. Do you keep him at arm's distance and be like, yep, he's in charge, I follow the rules, that's how it works? Or do you know that he wants to, there's a great verse in Isaiah 40, it's the second half, and it talks about the shepherd like cuddling the sheep, like literally picks it up and carries the sheep to this place. And I'm like, do you follow a God that has a cane and, you know, directs the sheep that way? Or do you follow a God that actually picks the sheep up and carries them and injures and doctors them when they're injured? And I just want to finish by reading a little bit from that verse, actually. It says, climb high mountain Zion. You're the preacher of good news. Raise your voice. Make it good and loud, Jerusalem. You are the preacher of good news. Speak loud and clear and don't be timid. Tell the cities of Judah, look, look, your God, look at him. God the Master comes in power, ready to go into action. He's going to pay back his enemies and reward those who have loved him. Like a shepherd, he will care for his flock, gathering the lambs in his arms, hugging them as he carries them, leading the nursing ewes to good pasture.